Hello everyone and welcome to another brilliant sport and lifestyle biz here on your Real Feel Good Radio, UK Health Radio. Well, we've got another blockbuster for you in today's show. We start off with part two from the adventurer extraordinaire 105 Ironman distance challenges in 105 consecutive days. It's Sean Conway. We then have two people from the world of sport. We have Claire Stancliffe reiterating how brilliant it is that being captain of the England women's deaf football team, and they're going to Malaysia for the World Cup. And Richard Whitehead, Paralympian, multi-gold medal winner, telling us not only how important it is to work in a team, but how that can also help your mental health. And we finish off with Professor Green, the superstar musician, who's back to tell us about how his collaboration with Three is going to help out data poverty in the UK. Throw in our SLB sports roundup, and it is a jam-packed show we know you're going to enjoy. About your training. I'm just going to quickly go through a couple of things that you've already achieved. So, you know, this isn't new to you. You became the first person to cycle, swim and run the length of Great Britain from Land's End to John O'Groats or vice versa. And in 2016, you done the world's longest triathlon, 4,200 miles around the coast of Britain. So you're obviously used to things like this and putting your body through extreme workloads. But what is your training to get this sustainability of consistent output up to the level that you need?
Yeah, I mean, it's a good question. So you're right. Nothing in the Iron 105 I thought would be a completely new experience. And I was a little bit wrong on that because I've never changed discipline daily. That's the one thing I've never done before. So I've done lots of multi-day runs. I've done lots of multi-day bike rides and a few multi-day swims. And yes, I've done events where I change disciplines, but you know, I did a month of cycling, a month of running, and then 3 weeks of swimming. So there was no daily change. And that came as a bit of a shock to the system, I think. And I did a lot of training. I did basically three sessions of each discipline a week.
Right.
So three bikes, three runs, three cycles. I just sort of had my training up at around 20 hours a week, which was the goal really for this sort of thing. The one thing I wish I'd done more of was back to back daily long days of either running or cycling. I should have gone and done a week's long bike ride and then a week's long run a couple of months out. I think that would have helped me a lot as well to avoid those injuries I got early on, I think.
Yeah, you think that might have been one of the reasons that it was the repetitive nature of the three different disciplines every day?
Yeah, because, you know, you're never going to be amazing at all three.
No.
You'd have to train for 3 or 4 years really to get amazing at all three. So yes, I had experience in doing each of them individually, and dare I say it, you know, maybe that was half the reason I succeeded in the 105 because of the experience I had in the past.
Yeah.
And undoubtedly had something to do with it for sure. But, you know, going swimming, cycling, running every single day, an hour 20 of swimming, 6.5 hours of cycling, and then 5.5 hours of running. A, it's a long day and it's a long time to be doing each one. You know, each one on its own would knack you out, and then you're on to the next one. So you sort of, by the time you hit the run, which was by far the hardest bit of the day, especially that second half of the run, you know, my legs just were like, please, can we stop? You know, this is not fun anymore.
I can imagine. One thing as well I was going to ask you, because for me it's another very important factor. A couple of big reasons, I think, for people not attempting something like this or not even looking to challenge themselves in a way like this is two things. I've got a small tattoo on the inside of my forearm that says, never let your fears decide your fate. Always encourage yourself to try something new and push yourself to the limits. But sometimes people just look at the big challenge rather than perhaps breaking it down into smaller pieces. Did you ever break it down into smaller pieces, and did that help you?
Oh, absolutely. And I think that's the thing. So when I was sort of pitching it to sponsors and that, I think they exactly did what you've just said. They looked at the big picture and go, wow, that's way too scary. There's no chance that's possible.
Yeah.
We're out. Whereas actually, I looked at it quite practically. I thought, right, worst case scenario, hour and a half swim. You know, that's a pretty slow swim to do an hour and a half. So I was like, right, I could do that. And then, you know, worst case scenario on the bike, I was like, you know, 8 hours, let's say 8 hours on the bike.
Yeah.
And again, worst case scenario on the run for me was sort of six and a half hours.
Yeah.
That still puts me within the cutoff.
Yeah.
And not that that's, you know, repeatable forever and ever and ever, because you're not getting enough sleep on those numbers. But it didn't scare me because I did break it down. And I thought, well, best case scenario for me would be an hour 20 swim, a 6.5 hour bike, and maybe a 5.5 hour run. And actually, I landed up going a bit quicker than that on my best days, and then hovered around those towards the end, which again, so I was sort of doing better than what I thought my best case scenario would be, because I thought I'd be hovering around 15 hours for the day. And actually, my best day, I think, was 13, 20. And then I was hovering around the 14 hours, really, for most of it. Certainly in the middle, I got a bit slower than that towards the end when I started to fatigue. But yeah, it was breaking it down into sort of manageable numbers stopping me from getting panic attacks, I think.
I mean, it's fabulous, Sean. It's amazing. And amazing to talk to you. I'm so interested in the whole lot of this. You know, not only the achievement and the physical demands, but the mental demands as well, because you must have overcome things. And obviously, you've already alluded to this. Some things you have to overcome are perhaps crashes or punctures, which could put something bad in check, or even worse, injury. You said you had a couple of injuries, and as early as day two, I think you said. How did you overcome these? Were they injuries that would almost recover as you went along? But how hard is it to, A, get up and then run through and swim when you're injured? And what was the worst one you had?
I mean, that was the big worry on this one, is you can be the fittest person in the world, but if you roll an ankle or fall off the bike, and you know, you could get a cracked collarbone, you know, you could get a stress fracture in your hip. For me, I think what was the biggest worry for a stress fracture for me, I felt like my legs, my tibia and femur, and that would have been fine. Your tibia is your classic stress fracture from running. I avoided those big ones. So the big one I had was basically where your kneecap starts rubbing on your bone, and eventually the cartilage will wear out and it'll just be bone on bone. And sometimes that cartilage will never grow back, and then that would be a lifelong injury. So luckily, you know, that was the worst potential outcome for me with one of my injuries. So luckily I nipped that in the bud early by using taping. I would tape my kneecap up, and then I would use these running knee bands, which physically just stop my kneecap dropping too far down, because when it drops down, you get the bone on bone eventually. And it was mainly left knee, but it was right knee as well a little bit, but mainly left knee. So I got that on day one, actually, because I had an issue with my saddle height, and it was my own fault. I just measured my bike wrong, because I went for a proper bike fit, and we're working in millimeters here. So I was like, right, I got my saddle millimeter perfect, but I'd just done the wrong millimeter, basically. I just looked at the ruler wrong. Yeah, it was my own fault in the chaos of the lead up. And when your saddle's too low, you know, the knee issue is the most common thing that happens from a low saddle. So I worked that out halfway through day two, that my saddle was too low, so lifted the saddle up again. But the damage was already done, so it wasn't until day 70 or 80 that I could even remotely bend my leg back to stretch my quad.
Wow.
So I couldn't do a quad stretch on either leg for 2.5 months, really. And it was only in the last 3 or 4 weeks that that knee became sort of better. I mean, I can still feel it now a little bit, but yeah, it's not too bad now. I can still ride, and I dare not run yet. I don't think I could run for a bit. But if I hadn't nailed that one early, I think there's a chance that that could have ended it all, if I'm honest,
And long-term prognosis, is that you should be okay with it?
I think so. I don't think I got anywhere near the point of it being a long-term thing.
Oh, that's good.
As I said, I nailed it earlier. As long as I keep on top of my stretching now and a couple of leg strengthening exercises, touch wood, I should be good. I haven't had a physical checkup yet, muscularly and skeletally. I've had my heart checked. So I had that checked on Wednesday, and my heart is all good, because there was the worry that I would have an enlarged heart after this. But I don't. So that's good. So other than that, I'll hopefully go for a bone density scan, and then go to my physio and just do some muscular work to see which of the muscles, because obviously I had quite a limited range of motion all day. You know, I'm sat on the bike, hunched over, my legs are moving in one direction, and on the road running, you very rarely use your lateral muscles. So there's a couple of sort of hip muscles that are a bit weak, and a bit of glute muscle that are a bit weak, because I didn't do any sidestepping. If you do trail running, it's quite good, because you're jumping over rocks and you're going left and right.
Right.
Whereas I just was running in a dead straight line, basically, for 26 miles a day. So, there's a bit of stuff there I'm going to have to work on over the next few months. But other than that, other than just extreme exhaustion that I feel now at once, because I know it's over, I actually feel quite motivated to kind of keep the fitness, which I've never had before. Which it's nice to have a positive mindset on this, because it's quite easy to spiral once you've done these big things, when you lose your focus a little bit. But at the moment, I'm feeling good.
One thing I was going to ask, if you don't mind, Sean, is about your recovery, your daily recovery, more than anything. Did you have time for things like ice baths and massages, or was it just basically fall into bed, go to sleep and wake up again?
Yeah, well, I varied it, and it depended on how I felt each day. I did have a physio that would come at the beginning daily, but then towards the end only once a week. I would have some whey protein, about 50 grams of whey protein and a pint of milk at night. And then a lot of the recovery was starting, you know, really towards the end of the bike ride, the beginning of the run. I needed to start, actually, almost everything I ate during the run was entirely preparing me for the next day, because I could do the whole run with no food, pretty much, because I would have eaten enough off the bike, and maybe I'd have had to eat a little bit in the middle, but really I was sort of starting recovery from the beginning of the run, really. And then I'd get home, I did some ice baths, but I found I was just getting really hypothermic, because I was sort of, you know, malnourished and tired.
Of course,
not malnourished, but I was just like, my immune system was a bit down, so I'd get out the ice bath freezing cold, and I couldn't warm up for an hour, you know, so I chose a hot bath instead. So I was having a really hot bath, and I found that really worked. Perfect. And then when I wasn't having physio, I'd just go straight to bed, trying to get to bed for 8:30, because I was up at 4:29. That was sort of my routine. It obviously worked, because as soon as I was getting the 8 hours sleep, I could sustain another day at 14 hours. And then that's when I knew that if I just turned up and didn't fall off the bike, it was, you know, dare I say it, in the bag. But I was feeling confident, you know.
Amazing. One thing I have wanted to ask you, if you don't mind, is why 105? Why not stop at 103? Well, or was it you wanted to go a bit further if you felt capable?
Yeah, I mean, once I got the record at 102, I definitely knew I wanted to do 103, because I wanted to know what it's like to do it knowing I didn't have to do it. You know, up till 102, I had to do it to get the record, and that was the fire in the belly. And then I just wanted to see what it's like to do one without having to do it. So I did 103, and then I was sort of feeling okay and put it out to the internet, actually. So I put a poll on Instagram saying, right, should I carry on, you know, because I'm feeling good, or should I rest up, see my family, put my feet up? And there was sort of 71% of Instagram obviously hates me, so they said carry on. So I did 104 because of that. And then I was still feeling okay. I thought, well, let me flip a coin now, because what I also didn't want to do is I didn't want to quit. Because of me, I didn't want to make that decision, because I knew I'd forever go, I know I could have carried on. And I gave up on my own course. I thought, right, well, let me flip a coin, and I'll let the coin decide. So I flipped a coin to do day 105. And the coin said, you know, heads carry on, tails stop. And it was heads, so I carried on. And once I finished day 105, actually, it was such a good day. It was just, it happened to be a Sunday. I had loads of the regular riders come and ride with me. And it was such a fun day. We were just all in a good mood. And after day 105, I was like, this is awesome. I definitely want to carry on. But again, I'm going to sort of let the coin decide. So I flipped the coin, and the coin said stop. And I was actually gutted. I just burst out crying. I was like, oh, I didn't want it to stop. You know, the community that came and joined me. The way I sort of explained it is, imagine having a job in the world that no one else gets to have. And it's really difficult. It's the hardest job in the world. Not the hardest job in the world, but it's really, really difficult job. But you're the only person in the world that gets to do it. And it's really, really rewarding. And your workmates are amazing. And the team around you are amazing. If I stopped, I'd be giving up that job in a way. And that was kind of sad, really. But no, I have young kids, and I have an amazing wife who had to solo parent for 3.5 months. So when the coin said stop, it was time to stop. I had numbers and printed up to 123 because I thought that would be the next big number. But, you know, I thought, right, when the coin says stop, I'll stop. And that's what I did.
Well, it's amazing. And I'm sure in the nicest possible way, from a couple of people, the word crazy has entered their vocabulary. I mean that in such a fun and nice way, respectful way. It is amazing what you're doing. So without me being as crazy and asking you this, are there any long-term challenges for Sean Conway? Or have you just put it to bed for the moment and you're not going to think about it as yet?
Yeah, my wife's got me doing ironing 106 from next week, so I'll be doing the whole thing for 106 days. No, I'm going to focus on the charity, which is the True Venture Foundation, trying to get kids into sport. So I'm basically volunteering with them indefinitely, really, giving them my time, because we'll have raised over £100,000 once we auction off the bikes.
Amazing.
So watch this space. yeah, I think I'm going to focus on that for the next couple of years, and then no doubt I'll get itchy feet and think of something else daft to do. So yeah,
probably
space for that one.
Yeah, we do a lot with children as well, like actually young girl footballers, but also young girls in other sports as well. So it's lovely to hear why you're doing it. But you tend to find the champions of the world can't sit still for too long. But as you said, you've got a supportive wife, you've got a lovely young family, so it will be nice to see them grow up, spend some time with them, and as you said, help other youngsters get into the world of sport.
Absolutely, and stay in sport, you know, like, because the big drop-off in sport as both boys and girls reach teenagehood. So, yeah, sort of really focusing on that.
Sometimes a deal-breaker because they get other interests, and to be that good, even at the age of 12, 13, 14, you've still got to be disciplined and you've got to be committed.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's just a top-tier example. But, you know, we still want to try and encourage kids to do sport, even if they have no ambition of going
absolutely
full distance, you know. So that's super important. And that's, and that was really nice. We actually got a letter from Prince William saying, well done, Sean. We really believe in youth sport as well. Keep going. Good luck for the rest of your challenge. And, you know, signed Prince William. It was pretty amazing. So that's going to be my focus for the next couple of years.
Definitely. Brilliant. And, yeah, I totally agree with you. We have girls, some of them come to us and they haven't even kicked a ball before. So it is nice to develop as well from the actual beginning. Sean, yeah, just tell us again the socials and the website about what you're doing and how people can get in touch with you, follow anything that you're doing.
Yeah, on Instagram, it's at Sean Conway Adventure or seanconway.com. There's links to the charity. I'll be putting a page up of all the statistics from Iron 105, my daily routine, my times, my splits, probably all the food, because I logged all the food I was eating as well.
Wow,
yeah. So it all go up there hopefully in the next couple of weeks, but we're going camping next week, so that's first on my list.
Well, Sean, we've taken up loads of your time today. I'm very, very grateful, and I've been completely compelled about what you're doing and what you've done and visions to keep youngsters in sport as well. Absolutely brilliant. So for today, I want to say Sean Conway, world record holder for 105 daily Ironman distance triathlons consecutively. Thank you very much and all the best for the future.
Brilliant. Thank you, mate. Catch up soon.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Apples and pears, beef and skittles, cider with Rosie, common or garden, Ant and Dec, fish and chips, mum and dad.
UK Health Radio and Health Triangle magazine. Each is good by itself, but enjoying both is always better. Add Health Triangle magazine to your monthly health regime. Check it out at ukhealthradio.com.
Strawberries and cream.
Once upon a time, human slavery was just a fact of life. Right now, animal abuse is often considered normal. In time, it won't be. Animal Aid campaigns peacefully against all forms of animal abuse and promotes cruelty-free living.
Check out animalaid.org.uk. It's time for a kinder world.
The station that makes you feel good.
With me today is an inspirational lady. She's captain of the England women's deaf football team. It's Claire Stanicliffe. How are you, Claire?
Hey, right, thank you.
Good. Thank you for joining me on the show. We're going to talk about your upcoming Women's World Cup in September and also a new piece of equipment that you're using while you're out there. Tell us a little bit about your football.
Yeah, so I've played football since I was about 4 years old. And I play for the England and Great Britain national team for 16 years now. We're heading to the World Cup in Malaysia this September.
That must be a fabulous experience. You must be very excited.
Yeah, I mean, every tournament that we go to is like a once-in-a-lifetime experience. You can never replicate that, so I'm really excited.
Brilliant. And fabulous to branch out in football terms. I know you've been in the Olympics, but it must be amazing that women's football is getting much more attention and you're getting the opportunity to go to a World Cup.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I've been so lucky to attend so many tournaments in the past. This will be my third World Cup. But for some of the new players, this is their first time. So with the hype around women's football at the moment, we're getting a lot more attention.
Fabulous. Lovely to hear. What are the team's hopes for the World Cup?
Oh, we hope to do as well as we can. I'm pretty sure that we're going to be successful. The aim will be to get to the final, but but we'll have to wait and see what happens because football's a funny old game.
It surely is. The Women's World Cup at the moment is showing that. A little switch or a little change can improve. Fabulous to hear you're doing so well. Can I ask what position on the pitch you play?
Wherever I'm put, really. In the centre-back or centre-mid.
Lovely. Right in the middle where you can control things.
Yeah.
Perfect. I understand there's been a couple of areas where it's been a struggle to get to the tournament, which is in Malaysia. So a nice bit of travelling. You have to raise your own money. Tell us the amount you've had to raise and how you've gone about it.
So back in April, the FA decided not to have the England Deaf Women's football team anymore, which unfortunately meant some players wanted to go, but they had no one to take them. So I thought, right, we'll launch a fundraising campaign, and Great Britain Deaf Football have shown us some support and said that they will lead the team to take us out there. We had to raise £100,000 overall to take the team. And so far we've raised £77,000, and we've had a really nice gentleman called Frank Hester OBE who's offered to pay for our flights, accommodation and all our kit. So we've done fantastic so far, and now hopefully that continues.
That's fabulous that you've actually managed that, and great that so many people obviously want to help. Very sad though that the FA decided to exclude the Women's National Deaf Team.
Yeah, but it is what it is, you know, we have to accept their decision. I'm a big believer in everything happens for a reason. There's a reason why so many people have supported us to get us out there. You know, we have a right to go out and compete and be the best we can. And it's so important for future generations that they can see that there is a deaf women's football team, especially children.
Absolutely, and brilliantly put, superbly put, is lovely. You have every right to go and compete, the same as everybody else. Yeah, so I'm so pleased that you're on your way. You said 77,000. Is that now all you need with the extra help you're getting from this kind gentleman, or do you still need the extra 23,000 to make things perfect for you?
So the whole trip to Malaysia is funded, but our fundraising campaign remains open because we're looking at long-term development now. No, we don't want to have to be doing this every tournament.
No.
Players shouldn't have that pressure on them to raise money. They should be able to just play for their country and it'd be an honour. And so for us, we're still sourcing sponsorship, still sourcing donations, just for long-term development really now.
And that's fabulous. And before we move on to the other part of the interview with this new technology, which sounds amazing, we do a lot with girls football ourselves. And when you're back, it'll be nice to perhaps get in touch and see if we can help raise money for the future in any way. Because we're trying to help girls get into academies. So the fact that if we can help you help the youngsters of the future, that would be amazing. But we'll leave that for now. We'll wait till you're back from the World Cup. So yeah, you're using this new piece of equipment, the XRAI Glass app. And it's supposed to help you communicate with coaches and other people. Just tell us a little bit about that, please.
Yeah, so I was lucky to have the opportunity to use the last training camp. And what you find is that every deaf person is different. So you'll have some deaf people that rely on sign language, some people that rely on a mix of lip reading and sign language, some that just rely on lip reading or their hearing aid and cochlear implant. But there will be some people that really, really struggle with all of those things because they don't know sign language or they find it really hard to lip read. And personally, I find it really difficult when I'm extremely tired or if I'm outside and it's windy, I can't pick things up.
Right.
So having an app or the glasses that display live captions in real time that's really accurate is a game changer. It just bridges that gap communication.
Fabulous. So basically someone speaks and the app shows what they said up on the screen.
Yeah, that's right. It will come up on the screen with what's being said and it will also differentiate between who's speaking.
Really? I mean, that's fabulous. It's great that it's here. It's obviously taken a long time. It's a shame people didn't think of it before. But I suppose it just gets about how we're progressing in the world. And it's fabulous. And the fact that you can use that, I guess, will help you and the team.
Yeah, definitely. I think when I look at some of the technology that we've had in the past, or even now with TVs, with subtitles, they're very slow, especially live TV. And I'm always 10 seconds behind everyone else. So the fact that we've got this technology now that can do it in real time just goes to show that there's so much more that can be done in the general world, and hopefully that this will push things along.
Absolutely brilliant. Claire, what are your hopes for the future yourself, personally and on the football pitch?
Personally, I just want to keep pushing deaf women's football now. You know, we set the platform and I want to kind of help drive that. And I'm coming to the end of my playing career. I haven't got that much longer left. So I want to stay involved in a different format and just hopefully inspire younger children to just, if they have a disability, it's not going to stop them from achieving what they want to do.
Claire, that's amazing. Honestly, it's so inspirational. You'll always be an inspiration to me just because A, you're promoting women's football, B, you're trying to help youngsters, and C, it is difficult for you. You've come through, obviously, a lot of challenges. So I think we're coming to the end of the interview now, time-wise, which is a real shame. I'd love to chat to you more. So perhaps when you're back, we can get in touch. But for now, I hope you have a brilliant World Cup. I hope the app really helps and is a game changer for the future for everybody. And I just want to say thank you so much for chatting to me. You've been a real inspiration and good luck in Malaysia.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Claire. With me today, everybody, I'm joined by a special man. He's a Paralympian. It's Richard Whitehead. How are you, Richard?
Hi. Yeah, really good, thanks. It's great to be here. It's great to chat to you. Looking forward to it.
Brilliant. Thank you, Richard. Appreciate your time so much. As we said, you know, you've got 4 Paralympic medals, got European and World Championship medals, but we're not here to talk about that. We're here to talk about a new initiative. Teamwork makes the dream work and the important part of being a team. Tell us a little bit about it, please.
For sure. I think it's really important to understand that I've been really successful in my career with the Paralympics. There's 2 Paralympic gold medals, London 2012, in front of 80,000 people, and the kind of legacy that that offers. But it never stops there. And we look at what brings success to the table. It's having that successful team. And for me, I've been lucky enough to have so many people around me that have provided me with the tools to be successful. I've been obviously fortunate enough to be supported by Bupa and Team Health to come together for this new research that shows people that are part of a team are more happier. And I look at my team and go, actually, my coach may be a bit grumpy, but generally, they are actually more happier to be part of a team. And also, I've got a disability.
Yeah.
For those that haven't seen me run before, I'm a double leg amputee. I wear prosthetics above the knee. And this provides other barriers and obstacles. So people with disabilities as well,
yes,
need to be part of teams more because of the challenges and obstacles that they have to overcome. So I think if you're not part of a team, you do feel isolated and you do feel that it's really hard to turn to somebody that doesn't know you, hasn't got the experience or haven't got the skills that you've got. So to be part of a team and to share those kind of different roles within a team are really important, and that provides everybody a sense of ownership.
Yeah.
And that's the reason why I'm kind of buzzing around this project, because it really does provide me with an opportunity to showcase my experience within sport and life.
Yeah, that's amazing. We'll just start off with a couple of sort of more worrying stats and finish off on a real high point.
For sure.
Isolation is an incredibly worrying place to be. It's very disturbing for people, and obviously if you're isolated, others don't know about it.
No.
But I understand from research that it's actually a lot more. 3 out of every 4 people, roughly, in the disabled community.
People.
Yeah,
that's right. Saying. Yeah, 3 out of 4 disabled people feel isolated. And how do we connect with these individuals?
Yeah,
I'm a person with a disability, and find that the communication avenues for people with disabilities are really tough, because we tend to always communicate on one level playing field, and obviously not every one size fits all. We have people with disabilities that are learning disabilities, sensory disabilities, physical disabilities, hidden disabilities. And for me, it's really important that we listen, we talk to people with disabilities, but also understand those challenges and obstacles so that we can break some of those down. But also encourage people with disabilities to be part of a community, because society can only grow working together. And equality, diversity and inclusion is a big part of my message.
Yeah.
And to be part of a team like Bupa really does provide me with the opportunity to connect with a wider audience.
Yeah, that's fabulous. And I mean, having Bupa, as you said, on board and Team Health is fantastic for you. Just something for you personally, Richard. We coach girls football and we use a lot of professional women to help us. What we call it, showing the pathway. So do you feel having someone like yourself is inspirational and almost a pathway for the community? Do you think that will help as well?
For one thing, I'm definitely not inspirational. Oh, I'm just Richard Whitehead.
You are the most.
Everybody in life has a real kind of mission.
Yeah.
And my mission has always been to be the best that I can be through sport. And we all have gifts, and it's about nurturing those gifts. So for you to have, obviously, the women in sport, the women in football to support your mission moving forwards is brilliant. I think the reason why disabled athletes are seen in this inspirational outlook is because not only are we people with disabilities, but we're challenging the status quo, what can and can't be done. And
absolutely.
I love sport. I love life. I'm very blessed to have had so many opportunities in sport, but I've had to work for them.
Yes.
And we need to encourage, engage with the wider community. The real thing is to give people opportunities. And that's why this partnership is really important, because it provides internal support for the brand, but also external support around the possibilities that are available.
Fabulous. And how do you sort of plan to put that into action? How can people get hold of you? Are there any events and things like that you're planning to hold?
Well, obviously there's your normal areas of communication through bupa.co.uk and the social media pathways like you talked about. And those pathways are interactive around the engagement with the internal staff at Bupa and some of the external pathways into the Paralympics in 2024. And myself, I'll be mentoring members of the public and new and engaging athletes moving forward to 2024, because I feel that's my responsibility as a British athlete, but also as a person. I love the opportunity to support other people and provide them with the tools to be able to navigate through life. We all are having a tough time at the moment, and I know that, but we also need to have some real good solutions moving forwards. So having positive people is great, but let's have some great tools to provide people with hope. And that's why being part of this team is something that I'm really proud of.
No, that's fabulous. And just to finish off, Richard, I just wanted to say it is an amazing thing that you're doing with Bupa and Team Health. And I just want you to reiterate the fact that it's not just elite people in the disabled community that get your help, is it? It's not just athletes. You're actually here for anybody who feels they need help.
That's right. And sometimes in society, we feel isolated because we don't feel that we have those pathways into success, ambition, or even have any hope. And what we're saying is that team health is for everybody, and team health embodies what a team should be about, and that support, guidance, and also opportunities at all levels.
Brilliant. Well, Richard, I just want to say it was fabulous to meet you and catch up with you on your project. You are an inspiration to many, despite you being humble and saying that you're not. And I wish you all the best with this new project and hope to catch up with you sometime soon.
Brilliant.
Thanks, Richard.
Yeah, thank you.
Thanks, Richard.
Awesome. Anytime.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Animal Aid campaigns peacefully against all forms of animal abuse and promotes cruelty-free living. We've been doing this for over 40 years. Every year, more and more people are living satisfying lives completely cruelty-free. Check out animalaid.org.uk. It's time for a kinder world.
A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
The station that makes you feel good.
Well, everybody, today I'm actually joined by a superstar musician. It's Professor Green. Hi, how are you doing?
I'm doing really well, mate. How are you?
Oh, I'm perfect. Thank you, Stephen. I appreciate it. Well, sadly, you're not here to talk about your music, but you're actually here to talk about a worrying subject, which not all parents are aware of or even suffer from. It's the importance of the data bank of mum and dad. You're getting behind a campaign to tackle data poverty. So for people that are unaware of this, please let us know what that is about and some of the measures we're going to try and help it.
Yeah, so the campaign that I'm here to raise awareness of, Network 3 have partnered with Good Things Foundation and, in this instance, the National Data Bank, which provides free prepaid SIMs that you wouldn't otherwise be able to afford them or be afforded connectivity. And connectivity is so important, especially in this day and age. And not in the case, in the instance of new parents, it's incredibly important, but not just for what people would expect, you know, not just because you want to stream an episode of Peppa Pig or Bluey to give you 15 minutes respite or allow you to cook dinner or examine a room and make sure there's no imminent dangers for your child or dan.
Yes.
But data poverty is such a huge problem. 30% of all households in the UK now exist in poverty. People live in poverty, right?
Yeah.
And 85% of low-income households say connectivity is an issue. I don't mean they've got a problem with the router. I mean they quite simply cannot afford connectivity.
Right.
Immediately, that's a barrier between so many things. Throughout COVID, so much shifted to being online. That's not reverting. If anything, even more.
Yeah.
Is becoming online. And whether that's databases, doctor appointments, job applications, courses, education, tools for children, there's just so much to it that data poverty gets in the way of people accessing.
And as you said, we're not just talking about people having a little stream to give themselves 10 minutes break from looking after the kids or anything. It's actually real relevant stuff because the whole world, as you said, since COVID or during COVID, has reverted to internet / online. That hasn't reverted back. I mean, we've almost been converted to doing stuff on our phones. So you said you're partnering up with Three and that gives data SIM cards to families.
Yes, so by way of Good Things Foundation and the National Data Bank, they provide SIM cards prepaid to people who wouldn't otherwise be able to afford them. So that affords their mobile data, texts and calls.
Which is fabulous. And data does get drained if you're not on Wi-Fi, doesn't it? You know, it's not just your simple if you're streaming, but searching for things to do, places to go, taking photos and videos, WhatsApp, it all drains it down very quickly.
It does, and you mentioned WhatsApp, you know, that's obviously something that we use, a medium we use to connect with people. And, you know, when we talk about networks and connectivity, what's really important to highlight here is imagine parenting as new parents, it can become incredibly isolating. Poverty can as well. The combination of those two things.
Yeah.
Further made worse by exclusion, you know, not being able to contact your network, your friends, your family, your social network. I don't mean social network platform, you know, but not having the freedom of being able to contact people. I don't just mean for a chit chat, but sometimes times of need, which there are many, especially during those first months of
absolutely. And exclusion, I think, is a very underrepresented form of poor mental health or struggling with your mental health, because that automatically puts you on the back foot as well, because the best thing to do, as we know, is to talk. And if you've got no method of contact, that obviously is a massive burden for people.
Huge.
So obviously it's a great thing. I know Three are a decent network as well. I think they command nearly 30% now of the UK traffic, which is pretty good. And I think they've actually increased their network. They cover nearly the whole of the UK now.
Yeah, which again is a problem for people in more remote areas.
Yeah.
So not only are they helping people who can't afford connectivity, they provide connectivity to people who live in the hardest to reach of areas.
Great. And we're not only highlighting new parents, but we know having young children and being a new parent, generally, you do have an increase in your usage of phone. Tell us a little bit about yourself, Stephen, if that's okay. How much did you increase the use of your phone?
I mean, my Google search has changed a hell of a lot. And I found myself on Google searching things a hell of a lot more, not least of all when, you know, scary things present themselves, only to find out that they weren't scary. I was just scared because I was uninformed or ill-informed as a new parent. And that happens a lot. There's so much that comes up. And then further down the line, when it comes to weaning and stuff like that, there's so many brilliant educational videos that help you understand what to do at the right time and when is the right time and how do you tell when it's the right time. You have so many silly questions. I can't think of any off the top of my head that I'm not too embarrassed to tell you. But you asked the internet some really ridiculous things for me in hindsight as a new parent. But it's unsurprising, and it's actually a really nice way to educate yourself as long as you make sure that you're using credible platforms and you're researching things properly.
Yeah.
It's a really great way to be able to access information around parenting, and especially when it's 2 o'clock in the morning and you're panicked and you're alone, your partner's not at home. And as a dad as well, Generation Y, us millennials, I was born in 83, so we're spending up to 3 times the time the previous generations were spending with their kids. So we're learning on our feet a lot, but it's nice to have access to information which further helps that learning.
Brilliant. And you make a couple of really great points there. First of all, it is educational. You can use it to educate yourself if you are feeling a little bit worried about, oh, is it a stupid question? And, you know, being a parent myself and sort of having come out of the other side of having young children, if that makes sense, you do feel a bit stupid. And if you are on your own, you do feel a little bit isolated. But there's no manual as a parent. My main worry was, will I be a good dad? And you just muddle through, don't you? Do you know what I mean? Whether it's a good time or a bad time. So having the internet to educate yourself on doing the right thing is brilliant. And having this initiative is even better for those families out there who you said can't afford it.
Indeed, yeah.
So you're very passionate about this, which is lovely to see. You know, a big star like yourself being involved is a great thing. But why are you so passionate about this initiative?
So I've become a father recently.
Yeah.
I grew up in a low-income household, which is a way of saying I grew up poor. You know, my grandmother brought me up. There were six of us in a three-bedroom flat when I was born. That quickly changed as her kids started to leave home.
Yeah.
And I was brought up by my grandmother. And it was difficult. And it came with all the difficulties that growing up poor does. I became successful in music when I was 28. It's a long time.
Yeah.
And so my anxieties will always be that of the working class. I will always have working class anxieties. But now I have a platform.
Wonderful.
You know, and can use my voice to raise awareness to and hopefully bring about some change to things that I care about. And, you know, poverty was something I saw everywhere growing up. You know, I grew up in Hackney, right? And everyone goes, oh my God, Hackney, I'd love to live there, or I do live there. And it's like, you wouldn't have lived there when I was growing up.
No.
You wouldn't have been able to live there when I was growing up. Going from a place you couldn't pay people to live because it was so undesirable to now being a place that people can't afford to live.
Yeah.
People say it's so different now, and on the face of it, it is, but I imagine that growing up in the flats there now is worse than it was, because you have essentially your face pushed up against a window.
Yeah.
All of these new coffee shops and all of these things opening due to the gentrification, which has pros and cons like anything.
Yeah.
But you can't access them. You can't frequent them because you can't use them. The idea of £3.50 for a coffee to you is mind-blowing.
You're exactly right. I mean, I had a similar thing to you when I was growing up. Not so much the fact as many brothers and sisters, which I didn't have, but my parents divorced when I was early. So my nan brought me up, to be fair. She was with me constantly. So I do know the pressures of not being brought up by your actual parents. So it's great that you're behind this so much. Just give us a little bit about data poverty. What is the actual real issue and how common is it, to be fair?
It's sadly quite common. 30% of all households in the UK live in poverty. 85% of those households, of low-income households, say connectivity is an issue.
Yeah.
If people are struggling and have access to the internet, please visit goodthingsfoundation.org for more information. Or if internet is a problem or you want to simply speak to someone in person, please pop into your local branch of three.
Brilliant. And that's great. And that was my next question, actually. Where should people turn to? So it's visit goodthingsfoundation.org if they've got access to the internet, or just pop into your local three store, usually on pretty much every high street, and they'll be able to help you as well.
Indeed, yeah.
Brilliant. Well, we actually look like we've come to the end of the time slot, which is a real shame, because it's been a real pleasure to speak to you. Love to have you back on sometime if you've got time to talk about your music, but also about how this is going, how the campaign's going, to update people. We'll get it put out there on our social media for the radio and for the show.
Thank you.
No problem at all. You know, it would be great perhaps staying in touch. I know you're probably very busy, but if we can get an update and get you on again, that would be great.
Lovely. I'm sure there'll be reason to in the future, definitely.
Absolutely fabulous. Thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it. Stephen Manderson, aka Professor Green, it's been a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Appreciate it, mate. Take care.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
We finish off this week's show with our famous SLB Sports Roundup featuring golf, horse racing, cricket, tennis, rugby, motorsport, NFL and football. We start with golf. And the DP World Tour hosted the Irish Open at the famous K Club, and it was won by Vincent Norman on minus 14. Second place, one shot back on minus 13, was Hurley Long. With a three-way tie for third, Ryan Fox, Shane Lowry and Grant Forrest. Also one further back on minus 12. This week they moved to Wentworth in England using the West Course for the big tournament, the BMW PGA Championship. The PGA Tour is back this week with a Fortinet Championship from the Silverado Resort and Spa using the North Course. The LPGA held the Kroger Queen City Champ using the Kenwood Country Club in Cincinnati. And it was won by Minji Lee, who produced a great performance to defeat England's brilliant Charlie Hull, both on minus 16, and she won on the second playoff hole. Ronin Ying was third, two back on minus 14. They've now got a little break and are back on the 29th of September with the Walmart Norwood Arkansas Championship using the Pinnacle Country Club. Horse racing, the two big results from last weekend, the Irish Champion Stakes, saw us select the winner at a decent price for you. August Rodin bounced back to form on his favoured fast ground, but Ryan Moore and Aidan O'Brien. The Betfair Sprint Cup, we didn't provide the winner, sadly. It was won with a great performance from Regional. Shaquille, the favourite, was very disappointing and almost pulled up. One though, our good friend Tom McQuand rode his 1,000th win of his career last week. Brilliant, and well done to Tom, who's a fabulous jockey. This week we've got the St. Ledger. We've already given you a couple to look out for in Gregory, Continuous and the King's Horse Desert Hero. Well, Middle Earth may be supplemented and that could be significant. And also, the other one we said last week, Save the Last Dance, the proviso still is there. If the ground is soft, she has a chance. On to cricket. The England and New Zealand T20 series finished at 2-2. And unsurprisingly, after two of the four one-day internationals, it's 1-1. Ben Stokes is back and performing really, really well. Tennis, the US Open, the final major of the season, was won in the men's side by the GOAT, Novak Djokovic. I call him now the GOAT. You've got Roger Federer and Rafael Nadal. But Novak Djokovic has now equaled Margaret Court's numbers of Grand Slams won, being 24. Is there an argument anymore, or is Novak just it? The women's side was won by home favourite Corey Goff in her first Grand Slam victory. She beat our favoured player Aryna Sabalenka in the final. It was a great final. In fact, both are great champions. Coco will definitely go on and do much better. And Novak Djokovic is just Novak. The Rugby World Cup is underway in France, and the hosts, we feel, are favourites to win the title. South Africa are looking as strong as they have done for a long time, and you can never rule out New Zealand, who are just amazing. On to motorsport. It was the MotoGP San Marino Grand Prix from the Misano World Circuit, named after the late Marco Simoncelli. Jorge Martin, back from his injury, won for the Ducati Pramac Racing Team. Marto Bezzecchi was second, also on the Ducati for the Valentino Rossi 46 team. And Frankie Bagnaia, the current series leader, was third for the Ducati Lenovo team. As we said, Frankie Bagnaia leads the series on 283 points. Second place is Jorge Martin on 247. And third place, Marco Bezzecchi, 218. They're back next on the 24th of September with the Grand Prix of India from the Buddha International Circuit. Well, Superbikes held the Pirelli French round from Circuit Manicourt. Race 1 was won by Toprak Ratsaglioglu, riding the Pata Yamaha. Michael Ruben Rinaldi was second for the Ducati Aruba IT team. Jonathan Ray was third for Team Kawasaki. In the sprint race, normal service was resumed, with the top three in the championship being the top three places. Toprak gained a second win. Alvaro Bautista was back on the podium for the Ducati Aruba IT team. And Jonathan Ray was third. Race 2, Alvaro Bautista got his win for the weekend. Toprak was second. Jonathan Ray third again. The standings see Alvaro Bautista out in front on 467 points. Actually being closed down by the brilliant Toprak Ratsaglioglu. Just 57 behind now on 410. And Jonathan Ray was third on 290. They're back next with the Tissot Aragon round from Motorland Aragon. British Superbikes are back this week with round 9, with races 25, 26, 27 from Alton Park using the international circuit. The series is being led by Tommy Bridewell for the Beer Monster Ducati team, who we reported last week have just sadly lost their owner, Paul Bird. However, let's hope they can move forward and bring home the season for him in his memory. Speedway Grand Prix are back this week with round 9 and the Danish Grand Prix from Voyens. Bartosz Smarzlik is 22 points in front with just one round after this week. He could secure the title with a round to go if he gets more points than Freddie Lindgren. NASCAR, the Hollywood Casino 400, was held at Kansas Speedway, and Tyler Reddick, driving his Toyota Camry for 23XI Racing, took the race. Second place, Denny Hamlin, also in Toyota Camry, but for Joe Gibbs Racing, with Eric Jones, Chevy Camaro from Legacy Motor Club, was third. The standings see Kyle Larson still out in front in his Chevy Camaro Hendrix Motorsport on 2117. 6 points in front of Tyler Reddick on 2111, with Denny Hamlin a further six back on 2105. This week it's the Bass Pro Shops night race from Bristol Motor Speedway. IndyCar saw the final race of the season with the Firestone Grand Prix of Monterey, and the season wound up with another win for a Chip Ganassi star, Scott Dixon, six-time world champion. Second place, Scott McLaughlin for Team Penske. And third place, the current champion and two-time overall champion, Alex Palou, also for Chip Ganassi. As we said, Alex Palou is now champion. A brilliant season, 656 points, finishing 78 in front of his teammate Scott Dixon on 578, and a further 90 back to Scott McLaughlin in third on 488. Formula One are back this weekend with the Singapore Grand Prix from the Marina Bay Street Circuit. Max Verstappen obviously leads the standings for Red Bull. NFL Week 1 results saw a shock with the first game of the season when the Kansas City Chiefs got beat 21-20 by the Detroit Lions. The rest of the results: Browns 24, Bengals 3, Ravens 25, Texans 9, Vikings 17, Bucks 20, Falcons 24, Panthers 10, Commanders 20, Cardinals 16, Colts 21, Jaguars 31, Steelers 7, 49ers 30, Saints 16, Titans 15, Broncos 16, Raiders 17, Patriots 20, Eagles 25, Seahawks 13, Rams 30, Chargers 34, Dolphins 36, Bears 20, Packers 38, Giants 0, Cowboys 40. One result to bring you next week are the Jets seeing Aaron Rodgers' debut after his move from Green Bay against the Bills, Josh Allen. Week 2's fixtures, Eagles versus the Vikings, Bengals versus the Ravens, Lions versus the Seahawks, Texans versus the Colts, Bucks versus the Bears, Jaguars versus the Chiefs, Falcons versus the Packers, Bills versus the Raiders, Titans versus the Chargers, Rams versus the 49ers, Cardinals versus the Giants, Cowboys versus the Jets, Broncos versus the Commanders, Patriots versus the Dolphins, Panthers versus the Saints, and Steelers versus the Browns. Football is back this week with week 5 of the Premier League and those fixtures. Wolves versus Liverpool, Fulham versus Luton, Tottenham versus Sheffield United, West Ham versus Manchester City, Manchester United versus Brighton, Aston Villa versus Crystal Palace, Newcastle versus Brentford, Bournemouth versus Chelsea, Everton versus Arsenal, and Nottingham Forest versus Burnley. And it's no surprise that Manchester City lead the way in the Championship. That's our SLB Sports Roundup. Well, everybody, that's the end of another great show. I want to say a huge thank you to our 4 amazing guests. Sean Conway, Claire Stancliffe, Richard Whitehead, MBE, and the brilliant Professor Green. Thank you to you, the listeners, as always, and to Johan, Raffaella, and the whole team at UK Health Radio for giving us this amazing platform. We will see you all next week.